Inside Outdoors, coming on the airwaves, coming your way.
Hey now, we're outside indoors, beat on a buck on a snowy day.
Hey now, we're inside outdoors, baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Inside Outdoors is brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills, forests, and lakes of southern Indiana. Produced in Bloomington and brought to you every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. Inside Outdoors features hosts Don Jordan, Buddy Bill Moser, and Rich Reardon, and gives you everything you need to know about the outdoors surrounding our local community, our state, and around our nation. With fishing, hunting, local and national outdoor news, the environment, natural resources, safety, issues in our community, and just down-home family fun. Our goal is to inspire how to be a good steward of our precious natural resources. This is WFHB Bloomington, Indiana, volunteer-powered community radio at 91.3 FM for South Central Indiana, also 98.1 in Bloomington, 100.7 in Brown County, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at wfhb.org.
It ain't a bunch of beans like they serve in the Navy.
It's bacon and eggs,
biscuits and gravy.
Biscuits and gravy, bacon and eggs. Whole pot of coffee down to the dregs. When I get out of bed, my belly big. For biscuits and gravy, bacon and eggs. That's biscuits and gravy, bacon and eggs.
Good morning, everybody. It's Inside Outdoors here in Bloomington, Indiana. I'm Don Jordan with my partner, Rich Reardon. Say hello, Rich.
Hey, how's it going?
Fine. Nice morning.
It's very nice morning, and partially why it's a good morning is we are here on WFHB. But sadly, for the last two times, we're going to be on this week and next week, and then that's going to be it for our show. We've been on the air for 20 years, believe it or not.
And, adios.
Yeah. It's with a heavy heart that I say that because I've loved the show, but Buddy Bill has gotten older and had some health issues, and so we're all getting older, you know?
No kidding.
It's been really tough for the last 2 years with COVID because we couldn't be in the studio, and then we were doing it by Zoom, and that can be pretty hard on everybody to do. And finally, we just decided that we're going to have to move on. So,
well, there's something more important than that going on, isn't there, Rich?
Yeah, there is. And that's the fund drive for WFHB. And I think it's a perfect time to say that it's just an amazing community service that WFHB does. So please consider supporting WFHB. There's a big red donate button on the website. It's totally secure. And it's at wfhb.org. If you liked our show for all these years, please know that there are other shows just as good on WFHB every week, and we'd appreciate your support.
That's wfhb.org,
right,
by the way, if you're looking for that on your internet.
Absolutely. Anyway, so in the last couple shows, I thought we'd kind of go over the history of the show a little bit and talk about some cool things that happened throughout the years. Originally, the show was called Outdoors Today, and I just tell you a little bit about how that came to be. When I first started working downtown at another radio station, Sarkis Tarzian, I had started producing some shows, and I'd always wanted to do a fishing show. I always loved them on Saturday mornings when, you know, and you can remember back in the 60s and 70s, they had a bunch of them, you know, on TV every Saturday, and you had bass people and whatever. And I always loved it, and I was a big fisherman. I used to go every summer to my grandparents' bungalow in New Jersey at a place called Green Pond, and I learned how to fish and boat and swim and do all that stuff. And so anyway, when I came to Bloomington and started producing on the radio, I thought, well, wouldn't it be great to have a fishing show? And I went down to see my buddy Rick Shedd, who, if everybody knows the lake, you'll know the Sheds, because the fishing shed's been there for many, many years.
That'd be Dick Shedd's son.
Yeah, Dick's son. And at the time, I thought it'd be a perfect opportunity for him to talk about fishing and what he had available, and also just talk about Lake Monroe, you know, every week. But he said, no, I'm too busy to do that. But I know this guy that you really ought to talk to, and his name's Bill Moser. And he's on the other side of the lake, and he's had Buddy Bill's Bait Barn forever. So I drove over there, and I started talking with Bill, and we just hit it off. And next thing you know, we decided that we'd try it. And I brought our little recorder down to his office in the bait barn, and we started recording the show, and that was in 2002. And so after a while, we were kind of doing pretty well, and then one of his customers came in, and his name was Phil Rambo, and he was a crappie fisherman and also was a retired principal from Edgewood School in Ellettsville. But mainly in his retirement, he was a professional crappie fisherman with his wife, and they traveled all over the U.S. So we asked him to sit in a few times. The next thing you know, he was there all the time. And for the first couple of years, we did the show from Buddy Bill's Bait Barn in the back office, and started having a lot of fun with it and making commercials for Bill. So we were able to promote the bait barn, and he was happy to just be in the show and talk about fishing and stuff. It was great. So that kind of went on for years until I saw that you had left the newspaper and invited you on the show as a guest.
2007, when you called me.
Yeah, we had done that for 5 years, and then I called Don, and Don had always been one of my favorite. Probably the only thing in the newspaper that I enjoyed, because he had, if you remember, he had his little bolero hat and had a little picture of him talking about the outdoors and fishing and hunting and all that stuff in the paper. And I thought we were losing something important, so I wanted to talk to you on the show. Why don't you give us a little rundown about what happened about that time?
Well, first of all, I came back. I first came to Bloomington in 62 as a student, and then the Vietnam War, and when I got out of the war, I came back to Bloomington. Sarkis Tarzian had hired me, a sight unseen, to work at his newspaper, the Courier Tribune, where I came back to work, and I started my outdoor column, Inside Outdoors, there in 1973. And I luckily had moved from the Courier Tribune to the Herald Telephone. It was in those days, before the Courier Tribune folded and let everybody go. And I was stuck with the HT until 76. And around that time is when I got into it with Westinghouse Electric Corporation over their discharge of PCBs in Bloomington. And that became a really big deal in the 70s and into the 80s. And actually, it's still lingering out there. But
how did you find out about that?
Well, there was an article by Robert Boyle, who's a freelance writer and wrote for Sports Illustrated. He wrote an article about the PCBs discharged into the Hudson River in New York by General Electric Company, and mentioned that the use of this material was in electrical transmission apparatus. Well, I knew that Westinghouse here produced electrical transmission apparatus. Mm-hmm. And I went down to the utility service board and asked them what they knew about Westinghouse's discharges. And about that time is when it all happened. And of a young man named Ron Nerig and his family had used some sewage sludge to put on their cow's pasture, their milk cow's pasture. And of course, that sewage sludge ended up to be rich in PCBs, and the whole family drank it for a year or so until Ron found out about what was going on, and he went to the utility service board too, and we kind of met there. And interesting thing about Ron, who still lives in the area here, is that his daughter was on the front page, or was a big picture of her with the cow Blossom that had given the PCB laden milk in National Geographic magazine, in an article written by James Alexander Tom, who also lives in the area still to this day. And there was kind of a tag there for the little blonde girl and the Blossom the Cow and a local family. And that really got people's attention. They hadn't paid too much attention to what was going on with the PCBs until that. And that sort of kicked things off, and things descended from there. And shortly after this, this came to a head, and I left the Herald Telephone. It was still the Herald Telephone then, I think, and proceeded to go to graduate school here in Bloomington, and then else, et cetera, et cetera. And I ended up back here in 2007, built a house here. And Rich, as he said, heard about me getting, they're dropping my column at the Herald Times, it was then, and called me and asked me if I'd like to do the radio show. And I'm certainly glad I said I did. And we changed the name of it to the name of my column then, Inside Outdoors, which, by the way, is copyrighted and trademarked so many times that I was in the Outdoor Writers Association for 41 years and ran my column in 7 different newspapers over the years. And this is it. This is the last installment of Inside Outdoors, and it's there's no newspaper to write it for anymore, so it has to be spoken word. And I appreciate the opportunity to talk about the outdoors here on this radio station and the others that we engaged with.
Yeah, for sure. And it's been an incredible run, and we've appreciated you being here. And, you know, in the past 20 years, it seemed like everything was positive news, and we were very happy about the outdoors and exploring it and telling people what we could do. And then, boy, in the last 10 years or so, it's just seemed like it's gone downhill. And, you know, I don't want to, you know, really dwell on that, but it's true. I mean, after watching things for 20 years, now we've got clear cutting, and not that there wasn't some of that before, but it just seems like there's so many problems in the outdoors here. And I'm so sorry to see that, because it's such a beautiful area. But that being said, there's also some really wonderful things here, like the Goose Pond and Lake Monroe, and a lot of the camping and hiking you can do out there. So it's been, you know, bittersweet in some aspects to hear about problems, you know, in Yellowwood and other places, and then also how much we love the area and the outdoors at the same time.
Well, I have to say that during my years, I guess, I was in the newspaper business here in Bloomington, that gave me the opportunity to go fishing at Lake Monroe every day. Mm-hmm. And I ended up with a bass boat and a pickup truck, of course. And I did fish at Lake Monroe every day. And in those days, there were good bluegill down there. And I fished most of the time with an old guy named Dick Dickens, who some of you old-timers may remember owned a bait shop in Smithville, just outside of Smithville, actually, on the main road going through there. And it wasn't a bad life. Yeah. So I decided to become an outdoor writer forever, and then I accidentally got into this environmental writing and took me in another direction entirely. But I've always been an outdoor writer, I guess, at heart, and probably always will be. And one thing is that many outdoor writers are beholden to the industries that support us. And that means the firearms industries and the fishing and boating industries. And I never played that game. And as a result of that, I never made a lot of friends in the business. And when the time came, there was a lot of doors not open to me because I hadn't played the game on the company line on firearms especially. And had a few disagreements with some local power brokers in that regard. That was even continued in after I came on board here at WFHB.
Yeah.
So that's it in a nutshell. It's been a good run. We've had a good time, and certainly enjoyed everything we did here with Buddy Bill and Rich. And old Buddy Bill, him and those hummingbirds.
Yeah.
You know. And well, and you mentioned how things have gone downhill. Well, you know, that's not just an observation. Over and over again, we've heard that the United States has lost a third of its bird population. That's like 3 billion birds.
Yeah.
Since 1970. I just read a thing yesterday about insects disappearing all around the world. Mm-hmm. As many as half of the species of insects that we had in this world are not here anymore. And if insects disappear, everything crashes. So, you know, I hate to be an alarmist, but boy, something has to be done. We can't just keep passing this over. And the glyphosate pollution now is worldwide. It's ending up in groundwater. It's ending up in rain, just like PCBs did back in the 70s and just like DDT did back in the 60s. We have to do something about the glyphosate, and that's what we're talking about Roundup here. The most widely used pesticide in America, North America, and probably many other places now. And it's tied in tightly with the seed companies. And so you know what that means. They have a strong political base, and they can stall or fight it off, and they have guys like this guy from West Virginia, Munchin, who will vote with them, even though his banner politically is on the other side. So, you know, it's a money game out there, and seems like whoever has the most money gets their will despite what's going on in the world. And I guess that's life in the big city. That's capitalism.
Well, and you know, you mentioned Joe Manchin in West Virginia, and that kind of reminded me of some other things we've done throughout the years. And we typically had Marilyn Evans, that was in 2009, that did a movie called Coal Country, which was all about the destroying of the forests and the mountains to get at the layers of coal that were just under the overburden, as they called the forest. And it was really amazing to meet a lot of people. Unfortunately, at least two of them that I became close with died, basically because they lived near these places where the mountaintop removal were happening. It's just amazing that how much people go after money and don't really worry about the diversity of the forest and things like that. And you see it begun, you know, that's where a lot of these bird disappearances and, you know, the Roundup and all that stuff is, it's just about money, you know, and it's not about really taking care of the planet. And we've really got to change that. So I hate, that's one of the reasons I hate to lose this show, but I really do feel like it's something that's extremely important for people to keep in their minds, and that is to do what they can in their own way to help the environment.
Well, you know what? All of this talk, this serious talk, has made me hungry for some biscuits and gravy.
Yeah.
Play the song.
All right.
It ain't a bunch of beans they serve in the Navy.
It's bacon and eggs,
biscuits and gravy. Biscuits and gravy, bacon and eggs, whole pot of coffee down to the dregs. When I get out of bed, my belly big. For biscuits and gravy, bacon and eggs, that's biscuits and gravy, bacon and eggs.
There we go. We played it.
Yeah, that was good. That was good.
And, you know, that's because that song came about just because Buddy Bill used to have biscuits and gravy every morning at his Buddy Bill's bait barn. And you could come in there and get yourself a little mess of biscuits and gravy and then go fishing. And it was quite a tradition.
Yes, sir. It was probably my favorite thing about the show was hearing that biscuits and gravy song. You know, it really lights you up in the morning.
Yeah,
and just about any time of day, really, it's pretty good tune. And
Since we're talking tunes, we should really bring up the Lutefisk song, because tell them about that one.
Oh, the Lutefisk song. Yes, well, it's to the tune of "My Heart Goes Where the Wild Geese Go." Isn't that the name?
I think that's what it's called.
I don't remember who that guy was that sang that, but yeah, it was a friend of mine in Montana, David Hofstadt, and I were sitting around out there with nothing else to do one day, and DL starts saying these words, and he said, "I think these words go to the Wild Geese song," and so we sang it out and recorded it, and it ended up on this show a few times. And when DL passed away, died, I believe, in 2011. He died, or 12 maybe. Anyway, when he died, me and Ralph and Sue Glidden, the people who owned the general store in Cook City, Montana, in his memorial ceremony, we sang the Lutefisk song for DL. And it has a lot of meaning for us. And it's not that great a song, but it's kind of funny.
My heart goes where the lutefisk go. I jump in my boat and I row, row, row. The lobster, the halibut, the codfish too. They don't taste good like the lutefisk do. They don't taste good like the lutefisk do.
Be good carp bait.
You know,
no, they're not good to eat.
The elempinare. It's a national dish in like Scandahoovia. The elempinare.
I bet they don't smell good.
The elempinare. Yeah, they eat that lutefisk.
Oh, you?
Yeah, it smells like rotten meat. Yeah, it just brings the insects in from miles and miles around. They still eat it up in the Northland.
Well, that's pretty good. I like that. Rich ain't laughing.
I didn't
He's
laugh
still
that one.
About that.
No.
He's
well,
not laughing.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
And if you know what lutefisk is, that's even better.
Well, you there don't. You go. I mean, that's the crux of the biscuit, as it were, right there.
Yes, man. Should I tell them what lutefisk
I
is?
I think you need to.
Yeah. lutefisk is codfish that has been cured with the application of lye.
Yeah.
And it cures it all right. I mean, you can keep it a long time, especially if it's cold. And but it has an odor all its own. And you have never tasted anything until you've had a bite of lutefisk.
Well,
believe
that,
me.
Lutefisk was originally from Scandinavia, I believe. And then,
absolutely.
And then it moved over into the northern country of Canada and Minnesota and all that area. So they still eat it up there, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. When I lived in northern Wisconsin, at the local grocery store, they had that lutefisk, yeah. You know? And eat it every year at holiday time, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's quite a song. And then, you know, we've done various things throughout the years. Like one time I rewrote the words to Neil Young's famous song, Heart of Gold, and had Bill sing. It was basically all about fishing. So I'll play that one here, too. This is Bill's version. Called Meso Fish.
I want some bait, I want some bass. I've been a sportsman for a mess of fish. These female crickets I never give. That keeps me searching for a mess of fish. And I lost my bait. Be searching for a mess of fish, and I got a snag. Keep me searching for a mess of fish. You keep me searching, I'm getting bait. Keep me searching for a mess of fish. I've been a sportsman for a mess so bass.
This is Buddy Bill. You know, the lake's still there and it's still wet.
Yes, sir.
Well, you know, that we did a lot of things. You know, I wanted to tell you a little bit also about some things that I did with Bill right before you got there, I believe it was. But one time I was talking to Bill Oliver from the Oliver Winery, who, if you remember, had a Oliver Winery balloon.
Yes.
And he said, I asked if he wanted to be a sponsor of the program, and he did. And so he sponsored the program for a bit and then took my daughter and Buddy Bill. We went up in his balloon and we took off from the right there at the football stadium and, you know, the big parking lot there on a Saturday morning. And I was a little nervous, you know, I'd never been in one before, but he made it real easy to do. And we cruised up over the east side of Bloomington and then right over kind of going out Lampkins Ridge Road, that area, right over the tops of the trees, which was amazing because you could look down and see deer and other animals and stuff where they didn't even know you were there because it's so silent, you know, until you hit that propane torch, you know. And we went all the way over Lake Monroe. And when we got to the other side, which would be towards Brown County, he took us up to 10,000 feet, which I had no idea we were up that high. And it's really amazing because you don't feel any wind because you're going with the wind. So it's very quiet, and yet you're moving along pretty fast. So anyway, Buddy Bill and I made it all the way past Seymour, and we landed in a guy's field. And, of course, he had a chase truck going with his son. And he would just drive up to a prospective place where it looked like we could land, and he'd knock on the door and ask the farmers, did you mind if they'd land, you know, we could land in their field, which we did. And then they were great because they gave him a case of wine. And they said, and of course, all the neighbors would come running over, they'd see the thing landing in the field, you know, and it was a big party, and then he'd pull out some of that wine. And it was a great way to kind of show off his balloon and show off his winery and make some farmer's day when they landed in the field. So it was really fun.
Yes, I have a balloon story too. Same balloon. Actually, my balloon story started back in about 1972. Mm-hmm. When I was a newspaper reporter. Lou Winkler, who was the editor here, some of you may remember him, asked me to go over and interview this guy from this law school professor named William Oliver, who had been the Supreme Court Justice of Frankfurter. Hmm. He had clerked for him, and he came to Indiana, and he was a distinguished member of the faculty over there, conservative politics, but nonetheless, he had a vision of growing grapes and making wine. And so I went out to Ellettsville, I believe that's where his first vineyard was planted. It was out in there somewhere. And he showed me his vines and told me about his future, et cetera, et cetera. Ran a thing about it in the paper, and he was always nice to me after that for that. And some years later, up at Canada at Olson's Lake of the Woods Resort out of Kenora, operated by Larry and Marianne Olson of Bloomington, who moved to Florida eventually, but at the time they lived here. And guess who was there but young William Oliver, and he was just a high school boy at the time, and was up there with two or three of his little buddies. At the time, of course, I had no idea he was going to branch out the Oliver Winery in such an industry that it has become. And,
yeah.
But anyway, it's odd that, you know, you have that long of an association with somebody like that or a family like that, and they're still here these many years later.
Well, that's about it for this show. We got one more coming up next week, and we're going to do the same thing. We're just going to talk about a few more things in the past and what's happened with our show. And we do want you to know that WFHB is having its fun drive. You can go online at wfhb.org and just hit that big red secure donate button. And if you liked our show for all these years, we're sorry we're leaving, but we really want to support WFHB and keep them on the air because they're a real community asset. And I can't imagine a show like ours being on almost any other place.
That's wfhb.org, wfhb.org. Which, by the way, the easy memory device there would be Firehouse Broadcasting, wfirehousebroadcasting.org.
Yeah. Well, Don, that's about it for this show, but we'll be back next week and do our final one. And so thanks for coming on, and I'll see you next week.
Okay, same here. Bye-bye.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening. Inside Outdoors is brought to you every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. right here on WFHB with hosts Don Jordan, Rich Reardon, Buddy Bill Moser, and D. Allen Brodenburg. And by the way, if you missed the show,
You can listen online at InsideOutdoorsRadio.com or right here on WFHB's website under Public Affairs. We hope to see you next week, right here on Inside Outdoors.